Welcome back, everybody. Ready for another deep dive?
Always.
Awesome. Well, today we're going to tackle Exodus chapters 19 and 20.
Oh, excellent choice.
Right. And we've got a fantastic guide to help us unpack it all, Dr. John Oswald.
He's really a brilliant scholar. I love his work on the Old Testament.
Me too. He's got such a clear way of explaining these sometimes pretty dense theological concepts.
Yeah. And he's not afraid to get personal. You know, he brings in his own experiences, which I think makes it so much more relatable.
Absolutely. So Exodus 19 and 20, we're talking about the moment the Israelites, fresh out of Egypt, enter into a covenant with God at Mount Sinai.
Huge moment.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't just some ancient history lesson, though, right?
Definitely not.
It's about understanding what it really means to be holy. Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
And how a powerful God, you know, the God who just parted the Red Sea, shows love and care in a very personal way.
I think that personal aspect is something that really stands out in Oswald's lecture.
It does. And it makes me wonder, have you ever had one of those moments where you felt like God was nudging you towards something? Like, maybe it didn't make sense at the time, but later you were like, oh, wow, okay. I see what you were doing there.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's like those moments, they really strengthen your trust that God's got a plan, even when we can't see the whole picture.
Absolutely. And that's actually a major theme in this passage, you know, this idea of God's faithfulness and how he keeps his promises.
Right, which is why this covenant, this whole event at Mount Sinai, it's such a big deal. It wasn't something God just whipped up on the spot.
Right. Dr. Oswald really emphasizes that. He says it's the culmination of centuries of God's plan.
Whoa.
Centuries.
Yeah. Think about it. God had promised Abraham that his descendants would become a great nation. He promised to rescue them from slavery in Egypt. And here they are at Mount Sinai, ready to enter into this covenant that will make all those promises a reality.
It's like all those pieces, all those stories are finally coming together.
Exactly. And the timing of it is really significant too, isn't it? Oh yeah, Dr. Oswald points that out, right?
He does. They arrive at Mount Sinai in the third month after Passover.
Third month. Okay, why is that important?
Well, remember, Passover celebrates their liberation from slavery in Egypt. But that third month also ties into the Feast of Weeks, later known as Pentecost.
It's Pentecost, okay.
And that feast celebrates receiving the Torah, God's guide for living.
Right. So Passover, freedom from slavery, and Pentecost being empowered to live in that freedom.
Exactly. And here they are, right in that third month, about to receive the instructions, the Torah, that will make their new life possible.
Wow. I never thought about it like that before. But it makes total sense. It's like God is saying, okay, you're free. Now here's how to thrive.
Right. And Dr. Oswald, he actually shares a personal story about this. He talks about feeling God leading him to Asbury Seminary.
Oh, yeah. I remember that part.
It was a huge step of faith for him. And, you know, at first, he wasn't sure why God was calling him there. But later on, it became clear how it all fit into God's plan.
It's amazing how God works like that, isn't it?
It is. And it goes back to what we were talking about before. You know, those moments where you just have to trust that God's leading you, even when you don't understand why.
Yeah. And, you know, thinking about that promise that God made to Moses back in Exodus chapter 3.
The burning bush, right?
Yeah. When God told Moses, "You will bring my people out of Egypt, and they will worship me on this mountain."
I love that verse.
Me too.
Yeah.
And here they are at the mountain, ready for this covenant. Moses must have been like, "See, God, I told you. You can always count on him to come through."
Right. Talk about a faith booster.
Oh, yeah. So they're at the mountain. They're ready for this covenant. But before we get into the details, Dr. Oswald points out something really interesting about the structure of this covenant. It actually mirrors the structure of ancient Near Eastern treaties.
Oh, yeah, that's fascinating.
Right. Treaties between kings and their subjects.
Yeah.
But there's a huge difference here.
A huge difference.
I know. So usually these ancient treaties were based on conquest, right? Like, I'm the king. I conquered you, so you obey me.
Exactly. Might mix, right?
But God's covenant, it's totally different. It's based on deliverance, on rescue. I rescued you. Now, let's be in a relationship.
It completely flips the script, doesn't it?
It does. I love that. He's not some power-hungry tyrant. He just genuinely wants to connect with his people.
And that's what sets this covenant apart. It's about relationship, not just domination.
It's amazing. But before he even lays out the terms of the covenant, before he gives them the Ten Commandments, God does something really cool, really intentional. He takes the time to prepare the Israelites for this encounter.
Oh, yeah, that's a really important point. It's not just, here are the rules, follow them or else.
No, definitely not.
God cares about the whole person, you know, their hearts, their minds, their actions, and that's where this threefold preparation comes in.
Threefold preparation. Okay, break that down for me.
So it's cognitive, volitional, and affective.
Cognitive, volitional, affective. All right, I'm going to need you to unpack those fancy words a little bit. What do they actually mean in this context?
Okay, so cognitive, that means getting their minds right. God reminds them of his past faithfulness, his incredible rescue from Egypt, and he hints at the future blessings that await them.
He's giving them the big picture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He wants them to really grasp the significance of this covenant, not just blindly agree to it.
Okay, I get it. So that's the cognitive part, preparing their minds. What about volitional? What's that all about?
So that's all about action. He gives them specific instructions. Wash your clothes, set boundaries around the mountain. These are physical actions that prepare them to do what he's about to ask.
It's like creating a physical and mental space for this encounter with God.
Precisely. It's about getting them ready to actively participate in this covenant.
Okay, so cognitive, getting their minds right, volitional, preparing them to act. Now, what about the effective preparation? That one's got me intrigued.
All right, this one's wild. It's all about the senses. Imagine thunder booming, lightning flashing, a trumpet blasting, and the whole mountain shrouded in smoke. Yeah, it's powerful. It's a visceral experience that makes them realize, okay, we're dealing with someone truly awe-inspiring.
I bet. It's like God's not holding back on the special effects. He's pulling out all the stops.
Exactly. He's engaging their emotions, you know, creating the sense of wonder and awe.
It's like he's preparing them for something truly extraordinary. I mean, I could practically feel the ground shaking just thinking about it.
And that's the point, right? It's to create this sense of anticipation, of reverence, of holy fear.
Totally. And, you know, what's so incredible about this whole preparation process is that God is intentionally engaging every part of who they are, their minds, their willpower, even those gut-level feelings. He's not just interested in outward obedience. He wants their whole hearts.
Absolutely. And that brings us to a crucial idea in Exodus 19.6, a holy nation. Now, Dr. Oswald really dives deep into what holy actually means. And it might not be what you think.
Okay, I'm ready for this. Lay it on me. What does it mean to be holy?
So he connects it back to the holy ground from Exodus 3.5, the burning bush episode, remember?
Yeah, when God told Moses to take off his sandals because the ground was holy.
Exactly. But Dr. Oswald points out, it's not that the ground itself is morally superior.
Right. It's not like the dirt was magically better than any other dirt.
Right. It's that God's presence makes it different, other, set apart.
Okay, I see where you're going with this. So for the Israelites, being holy isn't just about following rules.
Right.
It's about mirroring God's character in their lives, living with self-giving love and unshakable integrity.
You got it. It's about reflecting God's holiness in the way they lived, in how they treated each other, and how they interacted with the world around them.
It's about being set apart, being different. And honestly, that sounds pretty intense.
It is. And Dr. Oswald doesn't sugarcoat it. He admits that true holiness, it's countercultural.
Yeah, it goes against the grain of how the world typically operates.
Right. It's about choosing something totally different from the self-centeredness that surrounds us. It's a challenge, no doubt.
Okay. I'm starting to feel the weight of this. But how does it actually play out? How do you live out that holiness, that otherness?
Well, that's where the Ten Commandments come in.
Ah, the famous Ten Commandments, the heart of the covenant.
They're like the absolute principles that reflect God's own character. And here's something really interesting that Dr. Oswald points out. Four of them are about our relationship with God, but six of them are about how we treat each other.
Wait, really? So how I act towards other people is a direct reflection of my relationship with God.
Exactly. It's all interconnected. You can't have one without the other.
That's a pretty big deal.
It is. And it shows how much God values our relationships with each other. He cares about how we treat each other, how we love each other, how we show justice and mercy.
Wow. Okay, so we've got this foundation of who God is and how we approach him. But then these other commandments, they're about how that faith plays out in our interactions with other people.
That's where the rubber meets the road.
Right, yeah. It's easy to talk about loving God, but how does that translate into loving those messy, complicated humans around us?
That's the real test, isn't it? And that's what we'll dive into next time. It's really fascinating how these Ten Commandments, you know, they're not just a random list of rules.
Right.
They actually build on each other.
Yeah, there's a logic to it.
There is. And Dr. Oswalt does a great job of unpacking that. So we've got this foundation of who God is and how we relate to him. But now we're moving into the nitty-gritty of how that faith plays out in our interactions with others.
Yeah, like I said, this is where the rubber meets the road, right?
Totally. And the first commandment in this section really sets the tone. Honor your father and your mother.
Yeah, I was thinking about that one.
It's so foundational, isn't it?
It is. And it makes me wonder, I mean, we usually think about it from the perspective of kids honoring their parents.
Right.
But what about the flip side? Like, are parents called to live in a way that makes them worthy of that honor? You know?
Ooh, that's a good question.
It's like a two-way street, right?
Yeah, it is. Dr. Oswalt doesn't really get into that in his lecture, but I think it's an important point. It's about mutual respect, creating healthy family dynamics where everyone feels valued.
Exactly. And speaking of valuing life.
Oh, yeah. Good segue.
That brings us to the next commandment. You shall not murder.
Right. That one seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, like, don't kill people.
Right.
Yeah.
But Dr. Oswalt makes an interesting distinction here. He says the Hebrew word used here actually refers specifically to murder, not killing in general.
Okay, so what's the difference?
Well, God isn't opposed to all forms of killing, right? The Old Testament talks about capital punishment for certain crimes.
Right.
And there's also, you know, warfare.
Yeah, those are definitely in the Old Testament.
But what God explicitly forbids is the taking of innocent life, you know, for personal gain. It's about protecting the vulnerable and ensuring justice.
So it's not just about the act itself, but also the motivation behind it.
Exactly. It's about recognizing the inherent value of every human life, no matter who they are, where they come from, what they've done.
Yeah. And I think that's something we can sometimes lose sight of.
Yeah.
You know, especially in a world where there's so much violence and dehumanization.
It's a good reminder to check ourselves, you know, to make sure we're always valuing and respecting the dignity of every person.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, you know, Dr. Oswalt also points out that some of the case laws that expand on these commandments.
Yeah, the case laws.
They actually deal with stuff like animal welfare and protecting property.
Yeah.
It's like this concern for the well-being of all creation.
It's woven into the very fabric of the covenant.
It is. It's like God cares about all of it, not just human life.
And I think that's a really important message for us today, you know, as we grapple with issues like climate change and animal rights.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so we've talked about honoring parents and respecting the sanctity of life.
Right, the first two in this section.
And, you know, it's amazing how these ancient laws, they still have so much to say to us today.
They do.
But you know what else I was thinking about?
What's that?
Remember that Sabbath principle we talked about earlier? Taking a break, recognizing God as the author of time.
Oh, yeah. I loved that part.
Me too. It's such a powerful message, especially in our culture, where busyness is like a badge of honor.
Right. Like if you're not constantly hustling, you're not doing enough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But God's like, nope, take a break, rest. Remember that I'm in control.
I love how Dr. Oswalt connects that to the festivals and celebrations in the Old Testament.
Oh, yeah. What do you say about those?
He points out that those weren't just random parties. They were markers in time.
Okay.
There were ways for the Israelites to, like, align their lives with God's rhythms, to remember his faithfulness, and celebrate the gifts he'd given them.
I like that, aligning their lives with God's rhythms.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It is. It's like God's inviting us to join this cosmic dance of work and rest, celebration, and remembrance.
Yeah. And to find that balance, that rhythm that keeps us in step with him.
I love it. Okay, so we've covered honoring parents, respecting life, the Sabbath principle, and now I think it's time to tackle the big one.
Oh, yeah, this is a biggie.
The one that everyone has an opinion on. You shall not commit adultery.
Yeah, that's one that a lot of people might write off as, like, outdated or irrelevant today.
Right, like, oh, that's just some old-fashioned rule that doesn't apply to our modern relationships.
Exactly. But Dr. Oswalt, he really gets to the heart of this commandment and shows why it's still incredibly relevant for us today.
So lay on me. What's the heart of this commandment? Why is it still relevant?
Well, he points out that God chose the word adultery very specifically.
Okay.
Because it represents this breaking of trust within a committed relationship.
Okay.
It's not just about the physical act itself. It's about the betrayal, the damage it inflicts on that bond.
So it's really about understanding that sex is meant for something deeper than just physical gratification.
Exactly. It's about connection, vulnerability, fidelity, whether that's in marriage or any other kind of committed relationship.
Right. It's about honoring the promises you've made, creating a safe and trusting space for intimacy to flourish.
Exactly. And that respect for commitment and trust, You know, that's a theme that actually runs through several of these commandments.
It does, yeah. Like the next one, you shall not steal.
Ah, yeah, good connection.
Dr. Oswalt talks about how this is about God valuing individual ownership, valuing people's hard work and the fruits of their labor.
It's about respecting boundaries, isn't it?
It is, and it makes you think, you know, are there ways we might steal in less obvious ways?
That's an interesting question.
Like taking credit for someone else's work? Or maybe exploiting someone for our own gain?
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. It's like a subtle form of theft, taking something that doesn't belong to you.
Yeah, it is. It's a good reminder to check our motives and make sure we're treating people fairly and honestly in all areas of our lives.
Absolutely. All right, where are we at? We've got honor your parents, don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal.
Right. And I think that brings us to, you shall not give false testimony against your neighbor.
Yes. Truth and honesty. So important.
This one really hits home for me. You know, I've been on the receiving end of gossip and rumors.
Oh, yeah. I think we all have at some point.
It's brutal. And it makes you realize just how much damage words can do.
They can. Yeah. And Dr. Oswalt, he emphasizes that this commandment, it's not just about telling little white lies.
Right. It's about something more serious.
It's about intentionally harming someone's reputation, you know, through false accusations or slander.
And that's something that's even more prevalent today with social media.
Oh, for sure.
It's so easy to spread misinformation or tear someone down online.
It is. And it can have devastating consequences.
It can. So we really need to be careful with our words, both online and offline, and make sure we're always speaking truth and defending those who are being unjustly accused.
Amen to that. All right, we've made it to the last commandment.
The grand finale.
You shall not covet.
That one always feels kind of tricky, you know?
It is. It gets to the heart of our desires, doesn't it?
Yeah, like what are we truly longing for?
And are we finding our satisfaction in the right places? Dr. Oswalt points out that coveting is the root of so many other sins.
I can see that. Like if you're coveting your neighbor's possessions, it could lead to stealing.
Right, exactly. Or if you're coveting someone else's spouse, it could lead to adultery.
Oh, yeah. And in a culture that's constantly telling us we need more, more, more to be happy, this commandment feels especially relevant.
Doesn't it? It's such a challenge to contentment.
It is. Like, how do we resist that temptation to always want what we don't have?
Well, that's where our relationship with God comes in, right? Finding our satisfaction in Him rather than in things or in other people.
Yeah, it's about recognizing that true happiness comes from a deeper place, from being connected to God.
Exactly. And you know what? It even connects back to that idea of holiness we talked about earlier.
Oh, really? How so?
Remember, holiness is about being different from the world, set apart.
Yeah, like other than the world's values.
Exactly. And choosing contentment in a world that's obsessed with consumption, that's a radical act of resistance.
It is. It's like saying, I'm not playing by your rules. I'm finding my fulfillment in something bigger than myself.
You got it.
Okay, so we've gone through all 10 commandments. We've talked about how they reflect God's character, how they shape our relationships with God and with each other.
It's a lot to take in.
It is. But it's so good.
Yeah.
You know? It makes you really think about how you're living.
It does. And it raises a lot of questions, too.
It does. Like, how do we actually apply these ancient principles to our modern lives? How do we live out this holy otherness in a world that often feels so far from God?
Those are the questions we'll wrestle with next time in part 3. So we've spent all this time unpacking these 10 commandments. And I got to say, it's pretty mind-blowing to think about how laws given to the Israelites, you know, thousands of years ago.
Yeah, thousands of years ago.
Could still be relevant to us today.
Right. It can feel a little overwhelming.
It can. It can. It's like, how do we even begin to apply these ancient principles to our modern lives?
Yeah, like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Exactly. But Dr. Oswalt, he actually makes a really compelling argument for why these principles are timeless.
Oh, okay. I'm curious. Lay it on me.
He points out that these laws, they're not just like arbitrary rules, you
right.
know.
Right.
They're reflections of God's character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And since God doesn't change,
right.
His moral principles transcend time and culture.
Okay. I'm starting to see where you're going with this.
It's like those core values, you know, justice, mercy, love, holiness. They're always going to be relevant no matter how much the world around us changes.
Yeah. It's like a foundation, a solid rock that we can build our lives on.
Exactly. And think about that commandment against murder we talked about, you know? The principle of respecting human life, that's just as vital today as it was back then. It informs our discussions about, I don't know, War, abortion, capital punishment, even end-of-life decisions, all those really tough ethical dilemmas we're wrestling with today.
It is. And it makes you realize that these commandments aren't just like dusty old rules.
Yeah.
They're frameworks for navigating life's biggest questions.
They provide this like moral compass.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
But what about the commandments that deal with relationships?
Ooh, yeah. Those are interesting ones.
How do those hold up in our modern world?
Yeah.
With all its complexities and constantly evolving social norms.
Well, think about it. Honesty, fidelity, respect, those are like the bedrock of any healthy relationship.
Yeah, for sure.
No matter what form it takes. Right. So that commandment about adultery, it's not just about a specific act. It's about the importance of commitment and trust.
Right.
Those values are essential, whether you're talking about marriage or friendships or even business partnerships.
Exactly. It's like a blueprint for building strong, healthy connections with each other.
It is. And I'm also thinking about that commandment against coveting, you know?
Oh, yeah. That one's a tough one.
It is. It feels so relevant in our consumer-driven society where we're constantly bombarded with messages telling us we need more, more, more to be happy.
Oh, yeah. Ads everywhere telling you you need the latest gadget, the newest clothes, the bigger house.
Right. And it can be so easy to get caught up in that, to start believing that our worth is tied to what we own.
Yeah, it's a trap.
It is. But this commandment, it's like a giant stop sign. It's a challenge to cultivate contentment, to find fulfillment in something more lasting than the latest trends.
It's countercultural for sure.
It is, but it's also incredibly freeing, you know?
I can see that.
When we let go of that need to constantly acquire more, we open up space for gratitude and joy.
So true. So yeah, while the specific ways we apply these commandments might need to be adapted, you know, to our 21st century context.
Right.
The underlying values, they're universal and timeless.
Exactly. They provide this like blueprint for building a just and compassionate society.
Yeah, I like that. A blueprint.
A society where human dignity is honored and relationships are built on trust and mutual respect.
That's the kind of world I want to live in.
Me too. And it's something that we can all contribute to, you know, by striving to live out these principles in our own lives.
Absolutely. And you know, one thing that really stuck with me from Dr. Oswald's lecture was this idea that this covenant wasn't just about following rules. It was about reflecting God's character to the world.
Oh, that's so good.
It was about becoming a people set apart, you know,
mm-hmm.
a beacon of light in a world that desperately needed it.
Right. Like a city on a hill shining bright.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think that feels even more relevant today than ever before, you know.
I agree.
We live in a world that often feels so fractured and divided. A world is drifting further and further from God's truth.
It's true. But that's why we need this otherness now more than ever, right? It's about being salt and light, like Jesus said, bringing flavor and illumination to a world that's lost its taste for goodness and is stumbling around in the darkness.
Wow, what a powerful image. It's a call to action.
It is.
A reminder that our faith isn't just about what we believe. It's about how we live.
It's about putting those beliefs into action, allowing those ancient principles to shape our values, our choices, our interactions with the world around us.
So we've covered a lot of ground today, from the historical context to the meaning of holiness to the enduring relevance of these principles for us today.
We have. And I don't know about you, but I'm feeling pretty challenged and inspired.
Me too. Me too. It's been a really enriching deep dive.
It has. Exodus 19 and 20, who knew they had so much to offer?
Right. And before we sign off, I want to leave you with one final thought to ponder.
Okay, hit me with it.
We've talked a lot about this idea of holiness, you know, being other, living differently from the world around us. But I think there's also a beautiful paradox here.
Oh, I love paradoxes. Tell me more.
So in embracing that otherness, in choosing to live according to God's values, I think we actually become more fully human.
Well, that's good. I like that a lot.
We were created to reflect God's image, right? And it's in aligning our lives with his character, with those timeless principles, that we discover our true purpose and identity.
It's like by becoming more like God, we actually become more ourselves.
Exactly. So as you go about your week, ask yourself, what does it mean to live as a holy nation in today's world? What are the specific ways God might be calling you to embody his love, his justice, his mercy in your everyday life?
It's a great question to reflect on. And it's not about having all the answers, you know?
No, definitely not.
It's about being willing to ask the questions and to keep seeking God's guidance as we navigate this crazy, beautiful, messy thing called life.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So until next time, keep diving deep.